Today on 3M Inside Angle, we're talking to Eric Sorensen, a marketing leader at 3M Health Information Systems, who focuses on quality and clinical documentation improvement issues. Today's topic is Medicare's Hospital Readmissions Reduction Program. Just start with a general question. Can you give us some context for Medicare's Readmissions Reduction Program?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Medicare Readmission Reduction Program was a component of the Affordable Care Act. It's one of the earliest ones that took effect starting in fiscal year 2013. So one of the earliest programs, and you've also got the HAC reduction program and the value-based purchasing program. But this one started essentially October of 2012 was the first time period in which this would be impactful, which is the first month of fiscal year 2013. Essentially what it does is it identifies readmissions for a limited number of initial or index admissions, as they call it, some specific disease states. And then from there, if a patient is discharged and then comes back to another hospital for nearly any other reason, then they are potentially penalized for excess readmissions. And so essentially the intent is to eliminate these unplanned readmissions.
So what are the main program measures or diseases that are tracked by the program?
The six program measures are the acute myocardial infarction, or acute MI as most people know of it as, heart failure, pneumonia, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, and then coronary artery bypass graft surgeries, or CABGs, as most people call them. And then there's the elective primary total hip and or total knee arthroplasty. So either the total hip or the total knee.
There's some complexity around how they calculate and determine the penalties. And maybe can you walk us through that a little bit just to get us more comfortable with the terminology?
Yeah, it's interesting. We use the penalty word on occasion. Sometimes folks get a little frustrated with that word. We were actually at a health system and one of the executives said, it's a payment adjustment. And they were very upset with us for calling it a penalty. And it is. It's a negative payment adjustment. I call it a penalty because that simplifies the terminology. But conceptually, this program is a little bit unique. What you see is that each individual disease state has its own excess readmission ratio that they calculate. And if the hospital or health system is above that ratio for that individual disease state, they're penalized for that particular disease state. Then all six of those components are added up and they can have a maximum penalty of about 3%. And so anything above that, they have a penalty for all of their Medicare admissions for the entire fiscal year.
How is the excess readmission ratio, or the ERR, different from the normal observed over expected ratio that most methodologies use?
Yeah, most quality methodologies use the observed over expected ratio. So they take the number of observed or actual cases observed and then divide that by the expected, which is a risk-adjusted ratio for the number of readmissions in this particular example, the number of quality indicators that they would expect based on their complex case mix. And this one's a little bit different because instead of using observed over expected, it uses a word called predicted over expected. And the predicted and expected are very similar terminologies. And so you and I might wonder what the difference is. Well, essentially predicted and expected are both risk adjusted based on the number of diagnoses for each patient using the same diagnosis list from the HCC, or hierarchical condition categories methodology. And so essentially what they do is they determine the expected number of readmissions based on a risk adjustment of their patient case mix. And then they calculate the predicted number. And the predicted is based on their complex case mix and their actual results. So it's a little bit different than the normal kind of observed over expected. It's pretty complex the way they do it, but they use HCC diagnosis codes to calculate both of those and do the risk adjustment. Not the actual HCC methodology, but the HCC diagnosis codes.
Can you maybe talk about the similarity between predicted and observed, or maybe how to help people distinguish those?
Yeah, if I'm a hospital and last year I had 5 readmission cases for a specific disease index, that would actually be observed. Whereas with this, they take the same methodology for both predicted and expected, and it's both risk adjusted. So predicted becomes somewhat analogous to observed, but it's a risk adjusted number instead of an actual number. And so they just compare hospitals versus the 50th percentile performance, and again, risk adjusted for their hospital patient population.
Can you give us some examples of how an organization's ratio, their ERR, plays out, for conditions that Medicare tracks?
Yeah, so what you're looking for is the gap between the unplanned readmissions a hospital was expected to have and what was predicted, again, predicted being that stand-in for the observed cases. And so we've seen some examples where we've been running the data, and frequently what you'll find is a scenario where a hospital has just a small number of cases that are the difference between the expected and the predicted ratio. So looking at a hospital, I won't name the hospital, but I'm looking at a very large hospital. They were predicted through a kind of a two-year window to have about 13, it's exactly 13.2 of the expected unplanned 30-day CABG readmissions. And they ended up with 17 of those. And so we're talking about four cases. And those four cases was a significant excess readmission ratio of about 1.3, and that gives you a significant Medicare payment adjustment. Again, that adjustment applies to all cases for Medicare for that hospital. And so it's just a small number of cases that can impact their overall experience with payment adjustments.
It seems like even just a difference of one or two can be quite a financial issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Over a course of, you know, the measurement period is typically 2 years, and so you're talking about a handful of cases each year. At a smaller hospital, we've seen numbers where it's, you know, a ratio of 3/4 or 4/3, and so you see a significant difference with just one or two cases.
Are there some of these diseases or conditions that typically present the largest opportunities for improvement? Are there some that are, you know, showing up more often as you do these reports with different hospitals? Are there some that come to the top?
Yeah, we definitely have seen kind of some variation year over year as we've looked at the data. And there's some that are pretty significantly different in the 2018 data. We haven't seen the final release of the 2019 data, but in the 2018 data, there's a couple that jump out, and they're the newer ones. So the CABGs, the CABGs, as we like to call them, coronary artery bypass, and then the COPDs are typically the ones that have the most variance. And then there's also a significant amount of variance in the total hip, total knee, just simply because not every hospital does a high volume of those, and then other hospitals do a significant volume. So the orthopedic ones have a significant variation in those. So if you're looking for kind of the ones that are most impactful in terms of significant differences, it would be kind of those newer ones. The acute MI, the heart failure, the pneumonia, they've been around for a little bit longer.
Yeah, and people have kind of learned how to work with those and support those patients better probably over time.
Exactly.
CMS expects over 2,500 U.S. hospitals will be penalized in the year 2019 that we're going into here, the fiscal year. Are there some types of hospitals that are more likely to be penalized than others?
Yeah, there are. And some of the larger hospitals have weighed in on this multiple times with the different associations as they've looked at the final ruling. And it is large safety net hospitals that tend to have a significantly higher percentage. So we saw that in the 2018 data, and we'll look for 2019 data as well, but in the 2018 data, nearly 90% of large hospitals were on the penalty list. When we looked at academic or teaching hospitals, about 84.7% of those were penalized. And then we even looked at nonprofit versus profit hospitals. Nonprofit hospitals, about 81.7% of the hospitals were penalized. So it's a significant kind of weighting on the types of different hospitals they offer. We also looked at kind of an interesting story that we found from looking at other types of readmissions, not just the Medicare program, kind of an untold story, really. And that is hospitals that offer mental health services, about 82% of those hospitals were on the penalty list. So higher than the overall national average, which is around 77% of hospitals penalized, but this untold story of psych and rehab patients, typically they have a higher likelihood of readmissions, a higher likelihood of avoidable readmission, but hospitals aren't always geared up perfectly to handle some of those patients with a mental health or a substance abuse concern.
Yeah, that seems like an important point to drill in on a little bit. Can you tell us more about the impact of that mental health and substance abuse, those comorbidities, they're kind of those mega comorbidities?
Yeah, so we definitely looked at a few different sets of states' data, and we looked at a broader set than just the Medicare kind of index admissions, those conditions we talked about earlier, the acute MI, heart failure, pneumonia, COPD, et cetera, right? So we looked at a broader set of data. And some of the states, for instance, in Rhode Island, we saw the risk of readmission doubles when a mental health or substance abuse comorbidity is present. In Florida, more than 27% of the potentially preventable readmissions were related to a mental health or substance abuse diagnosis. And so you'd think the initial admissions that are leading to preventable readmissions would be something like heart failure or pneumonia, but in fact, the top three end up being schizophrenia, bipolar disorders, and major depressive disorders.
Do most of these preventables end up coming through an emergency department, or is it more complicated than that?
Yeah, not always, but many of them do. We are typically talking about some very specific conditions that are oftentimes pretty serious. And you kind of think of a patient and what they're going through. They've been discharged from a hospital stay, and then they're experiencing some sort of difficulty and coming back in. Usually it's for the same condition, but in some cases, you know, some other trauma has occurred. Kind of a personal interest story here. I know somebody, I have a family member that was in the hospital for a procedure and ended up being discharged after everything was taken care of. But then, you know, they ended up with a urinary tract infection and some additional difficulties. And there was a kind of a question of, do we go back to the same hospital where we had the trouble, or do we go to a different hospital? Do we go to the emergency department, or do we try to connect with a primary care physician? And as things got more serious, we ended up going back to another hospital. And so it's kind of an interesting scenario when you think about the psychology of the patient and what they're going through as they deal with some of these issues of difficulty. And not every scenario of these avoidable readmissions is indeed that type of example that I gave. But definitely there are types of readmissions that can be planned. There are types of readmissions that never could be controlled or preventable, but there's a lot of scenarios where they end up coming through the emergency department, and frequently they end up being readmitted due to some of the difficulties the patient is having.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of situations that are just, like you said, just really impossible to control, or really difficult to control, even if you're doing a lot of the right things, following up on treatment and so on.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of hospitals try to take proactive measures to help their patients after their discharge. They've changed some of their discharge instructions processes. They've got follow-up phone calls. They're doing all these things to try to help out the patient. And in some cases, the patient just is not somebody that they can control. They aren't going to fill their prescription. They don't have the support system at home. They don't live in an area where there's a supermarket that offers fresh fruit and vegetables and things like that. So there's all of these issues that impact the readmission program, which is why some of the larger hospitals, academic hospitals, safety net hospitals, have concerns with the fact that they're in these programs. But there are things that they can do to help reduce the avoidable readmissions.
Yeah, and I think that you can also see situations where you've got an urban center hospital where the population tends to be clustered around the downtown area, and then these problems are just going to be bigger for that.
Yeah.
Well, the situation can seem dire, but do you think that, you know, the program is working? Is it making a difference in spite of these challenges?
Yeah, definitely. When you look at the data, the program is working. And you could argue that they're playing whack-a-mole with some of the different mechanisms that they have, right? They smash one problem and it pops up later elsewhere. But ultimately, the data indicates that they have had success. So obviously, you can't compare the total number of readmissions in the program from now versus 2013 because we've added a few additional index condition types. But if you hold that constant and you look at some of the different types of admissions that were index admissions that have been in the entire history of the program, we've seen a significant reduction in the number of readmissions for the Medicare population, such as about 29,000 readmissions over 5 years have been reduced. We've also seen it in individual states and situations. So for instance, 3M actually worked with the state of Minnesota. They had a program called RARE, and they actually reduced preventable readmissions by about 19%, which translated to about 8,000 fewer readmissions over about a year and a half time period. In the state of New York, the 10 largest hospitals decreased potentially preventable readmissions by about 20%, even when kind of looking at their risk adjustment, and they were taking on more at-risk readmission types of patients. Texas, another state that had some great results with their program. So their STAR program, which is their largest Medicaid program, they saw a reduction of potentially preventable readmissions of more than 1,000 of those readmissions. So we're seeing different programs, both at the state level and at the federal level for Medicare, have a positive impact. Individual payers are having success, state agencies having success, and then of course the federal government program.
You've mentioned this a little bit, but what are some of the things you think are going on? You travel around to quite a few hospitals in these successful states or individual health systems. What are they doing to achieve these reductions that maybe other states could replicate? You mentioned, you know, like follow-up visits and calls and things like that. But what are some of the other things they're doing?
Those kind of proactive discharge mechanisms are definitely one of the key pieces that a hospital or health system can implement. And that's really focused on the care side. A couple other thoughts. One is data is only as accurate as the information that you can get out of it and the information that you're putting into it. And so one of the problems with any of these programs is the accuracy of the risk adjustment factors that they're using. And so in this case, we're using the HCC diagnoses, and we're looking at the disease burden of each patient inside the hospital and then kind of the readmission disease burden, and we're calculating expected readmission rates. Now, that's important for the patients who are indeed readmitted, but this is important for your overall population. So one of the things organizations are doing is looking at the accuracy of their HCC coding and the clinical documentation that supports that coding. And that helps them get a more accurate baseline for that expected and predicted ratio. And we've seen a lot of scenarios where just simply by focusing on accurate documentation, that's taken them out of the penalty zone into a more accurate place. And then you look at the next step is they have a better understanding of all the patients who should be considered readmissions, and then they can take proactive measures clinically. And a lot of the organizations are looking at, again, discharge instructions and discharge planning processes. They're looking at some of the social determinants of health for these patients and capturing, does the patient have somebody who can take care of them? Do we need to have a home health agency intervene? Does the patient have access to fulfill their prescriptions? Things like that. But that front end piece of making sure we have accurate data so that we can correctly tackle the problem, kind of one of those Lean Six Sigma concepts. You not want to make sure that you're measuring the problem accurately. And so we've seen a lot of organizations really tackle the HCC coding to make sure that they have that down from the expected versus predicted ratios. One other thing to think about is as they're admitting patients, you want to make sure they're not gaming the system. And so they want to make sure their ED processes, their observation processes, and then their actual inpatient admission processes are not falsifying the overall data. So there are compliant ways to make sure that they are reducing these avoidable readmissions and you're not sitting a patient into observation for 3 days just so that you avoid them counting as a readmission.
Yeah, you can see how there can be a lot of levels of complexity in terms of just knowing exactly what happened in the patient encounter. It kind of comes down to that, as so many things do.
Right.
Well, thanks so much for your time and your insights on readmissions.
Thanks, Steve.
We appreciate it. Thank you.